The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
You are listening to Crawl Space on the Crawl Space Media Network. If you like this show, you'll love Missing, which is also hosted by us.
Missing started as Missing Maura Murray, and now it continues raising awareness for all missing people. And we also have an entire network of shows you'll love. Check them out at crawlspace-media.com.
Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. What's up, Lance?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for asking, Tim. I'm really looking forward to this episode with our good friend, our colleague, Jordan Bonaparte.
I'm looking forward to this episode, Lance, as well, because we speak with our friend Jordan Bonaparte of North of the Border. He does the nighttime podcast out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. And we've known him for a while, Lance. He's a recurring guest on our shows, as we are on his. And we sort of threw together a spontaneous live show last week. And it was supposed to be for Crawl Space, for this very slot that it's appearing in as a podcast. But we recorded it live on YouTube on Jordan's channel, which kind of gives it a different vibe than a typical Crawl Space episode.
And you see, I like to talk to Jordan about everything that's Canadian related because he is from Nova Scotia. It's a little bit of a different culture, and that just fascinates me, especially the crime part. But you love to talk to Jordan about UFOs.
That is true.
No matter how hard he tries to change the subject, you love to talk to him about UFOs, and he knows a lot about UFOs.
And his coverage on his show, the Nighttime Podcast, of his UFO series is unlike, you can't get that anywhere else. I mean, it's specific to Nova Scotia, and I just like him, and like we talk about in this episode, Lance, I love these little stories too. And he talks about Candace and Anagate and what they've seen in the sky above their house, and it's fascinating. You'll hear about it. We'll play a quick clip. And if you're watching the YouTube version, you'll see a little bit of imagery as well. Lance, this was a freewheeling conversation, as we sort of jokingly describe in the episode, because it did happen so spontaneously. And we did it on his channel. And also, we took callers. Our good friend Aurelia calls, and that is in the Patreon version. Our other really good friend, Chloe Cantor, calls in, and that actually is played at the very end of this episode. So that's the very last thing you're going to hear. It's mostly talk about Jordan's show, and then you're going to hear about Chloe and her GBS diagnosis.
Right. She gives us a wonderful breakdown of what it's been like having GBS. Again, Chloe Cantor from True Crime Twins with her twin sister, Melina Cantor. They've taken a little bit of a break because Chloe has been going through this. It's a very difficult nerve damaging syndrome that she is getting some pretty unique and revolutionary, dare I say, treatment for right now. She said it looks like she will make almost a full recovery. It's just a matter of time. But so good to hear her voice. So good to get that update. So if you're a fan of True Crime Twins and Chloe, listen for this call. It was such a nice surprise.
And part two of this conversation, Lance, is going to be played in full on our Patreon page. We do get into some Maura Murray topics, and some of that stuff is dated already, and that's one of the reasons that we're going to play it only on Patreon. We talked about this diary that was found in Amherst, Massachusetts, that turns out was not related to Maura Murray, so there's really no reason to play some of that here. So it's going on Patreon, so check it out there at patreon.com/crawlspacepodcast.
And be sure to join the movement that I think we officially launched during this episode, during this conversation with Jordan. We are no longer calling UFOs UFOs. We are now calling UFOs UAPs. UAPs. Hashtag UAP.
Yes. Unidentified aerial phenomenon, which is a little bit more appropriate as we discussed in the episode. Doesn't really come with the sort of Martian stigma sort of associated with UFO. Okay, so that's it, Lance. Check out Nighttime Podcast and Jordan Bonaparte. Follow him on Twitter and follow us on Twitter. We're at Crawlspace Pod. Check out all of the shows at crawlspace-media.com.
And go ahead and follow the new Twitter account at Crawlspace Media to stay up to date on all of the aforementioned shows on the Crawlspace Media Network.
We made it, Tim and Lance. We're on YouTube.
Wow. All right. I'm pumped.
Made it.
We made it. The nice people at YouTube showed up here with the cameras. They got us all set up. The food was great beforehand. The makeup team was fantastic. The three of us looked great.
They rolled out the red carpet for us and couldn't be more appreciative of that.
Yeah. How you guys doing?
Doing great tonight. It is
a
Monday night. Kind of unwinding from the beginning of the week here. Really looking forward to having a freewheeling conversation with you, Jordan Bonaparte, of the Nighttime Podcast on your airwaves, even though this is technically going to be released as a Crawl Space podcast episode. So
yeah,
a bit of
the background behind this is very complicated, but it's going to work. And this, I consider YouTube like the modern version of community television. I don't know if it was the same where you guys were, but when I was a kid, we had like our channel 10 was the community TV. So whatever was going on in my small town, you'd go on channel 10 and there'd be like, you know, bingo, like down the street. And then the next day would be like, you know, a baseball game happening in my neighborhood. I think YouTube is like this bizarre, mutated, modern version of that.
Well, funny you should mention cable access local TV stations, because Tim Poleary got his start on the Medford, Massachusetts public access.
Yeah,
because
really?
his dad was president of the organization. I served on the board for a period of time, and for about, I think, like 2 years.
Wow.
So, see? Freewheeling they conversation.
They didn't air Pan Man, though, right?
Oh, of course they did. They had Pan Man 1 and 2.
You're kidding, right? They didn't air.
They haven't aired the feature film, but they aired the ones that were made before the feature film that happened in like 2012 or whatever. These are movies from high school and just after high school, like circa 1999, 2000.
It's the kind of movie you would expect to see on late night community TV. It's like, got some guy in our town made this movie. Dude with a pan on his head.
People embrace it in Medford, Massachusetts.
Oh, wow. Let me tell you just one quick cable access story. I don't know if you listened to the episode of my show that was all about a character on my Channel 10 community TV. Your dad maybe would be into this, Tim, because it's a very like community TV story. Is when I was like probably 7 or 8, around that time, so that we're talking like towards the late 80s, There was this guy in my hometown. His name is Chickie McPhee. He's passed away now. But this guy is just kind of a regular dude, probably had a pretty bad alcohol problem. And he became kind of a hometown folk hero by wherever karaoke was happening, he would show up. People would buy him drinks and give him drinks because he didn't have any money or anything. By the once he got completely like fall over drunk hammered, they would push him on stage and he would sing the song Wild Thing. And it would happen like every Saturday night or anytime there was karaoke, Chickie would show up, get hammered, sing Wild Thing. And it became such a big deal in my small town that the people started going to karaoke just to see if Chickie would be there, get their picture with him and cheer him on and all this stuff. People started buying and selling shirts that said, I heart Chickie. And then what ended up happening is a team from our community Channel 10 TV station would go to karaoke to film his performances and air them late at night of, again, this old man barely able to stand up. He would sing Wild Thing, Popeye the Sailor Man, and Yellow Submarine. But I did a... I remember when I was a kid once, my dad let me stay up late at night with him and his friends to watch Chickie. So I have these really strange memories about it. But I did a two-part series about Chickie McPhee where I interviewed his, like, his brother and his best friend. He's passed away now. But anyway, if you should check out those episodes and you should play it for your dad because I bet you he'd love it.
And you've got the performances from Chickie, too.
Yeah, I got a few on my YouTube. They're pretty wild. It's something that I think only happens in the 80s in a small town. Nowadays, some kind of community service people would intervene and prevent something like that from catching on like wildfire.
As the anticipation in the room comes to a boiling point, they know he's in the room, but when is he coming up? Yes, he's not your average oversexed, ultra-macho male musician. No! He's your basic, semi-subversive, underground womanizer, playboy womanizer, the one and only Chickie McPhee! I feel like chicken tonight, but the crowd goes wild. The chicken is here. Everybody's doing the chicken.
This really has the earmarks of being a niche documentary. You should really collect all of this material that you have, put it together, and do a little bit of a character study of this guy. I mean, Chickie McPhee, karaoke
the
king.
Wild like, thing. The Wild Thing is
the
what
Wild
we call
Thing. I mean, that sells itself. That's brilliant.
Yeah, well, I guess as close as I'll get to that is my podcast. Sadly, he passed away like 2 years or 3 years before I did the podcast, but... Anyway, it's like stories like that. I just love these little like feathers in the rough. Is that the saying?
Sure.
Diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
You know what
else? Feathers
I'll
say. In your cap.
Yeah. We're not going to give you a hard time about that. But I do remember the last time we spoke to you, tried to encourage you to do a documentary. It was about the guy that we cannot name.
Yeah, luckily we didn't do that because if we had have gone forward with that documentary, we probably wouldn't be here. At least I probably would have been stabbed, or you would have found me in a ditch somewhere with a leather glove down my throat. Yeah. But yeah, we didn't go through with that plan.
Well, luckily we did not. We were talking about public access, and do you remember, I brought this up before, I believe it happened in like the late 80s, maybe like 87 or something, the Max Headroom incident?
Oh, yeah. That's such an amazing story. I've watched and listened to a lot of stuff about that. Do you want to describe it?
Yeah. So I think it was Chicago. I think two stations, they might have been community or public broadcast stations. They were hijacked, and somebody came on, like Max Headroom, that figure that I think he endorsed like Pepsi or something. You know him, like that, you know, Max Headroom guy, and he had
he's like this glitchy, he was like kind of like a poorly designed computer guy, so he was all glitchy and animated, right. kind of weird.
Right. Yeah. But somebody dressed up like him and hijacked these stations and started talking. And it's honestly like, you can find it on YouTube. It's one of the freakiest things. I remember that being one of the first things like I saw, and like it just spooked me out. Like it's truly gets under your skin type stuff.
Yeah, just it's so he managed to like hijack the cable television waves, so everybody's be watching TV and all of a sudden like whatever show you're watching would just cloud over, and all of a sudden it was just this guy dressed as Max Headroom,
and he was saying kind of gibberish type things. I have to revisit it. I haven't watched that in a while, but again, freaky stuff.
The magic is just that it happened. It's again, stuff like that can't really happen nowadays, because it would be, in order to like hack whatever digital kind of network our TV travels on, would be such a complicated thing. But there another similar story. I probably recommended this movie to you guys. Do you remember ever hearing me talk about a movie called Resurrect Dead? It's the story of the Toynbee tiles. Does this mean anything to you?
I love that documentary.
Okay, you've seen it. Do you know it, Tim?
Yeah, I know a bit about this, yeah.
Okay, so the Toynbee tiles is this kind of phenomenon that, I don't know if it's still going on, but people were finding these, I guess you would call it like engraved plastic tiles that had these bizarre messages about the dead being resurrected on the planet Jupiter, and it was referencing statements made by this sci-fi author with the last name Toynbee. And these tiles were appearing all over the U.S. and even in Mexico, I think. And a documentary team tried to set out to find like who was making these tiles and why. That documentary is called Resurrect Dead. But one of the things in looking for who was making these tiles and placing them all over the place, they found out that the guy, not only was he placing the tiles, but he was driving around in his car with some kind of machine that would take over the AM radio, so people would be listening to the radio and it would cut out and they would hear him going on about the same stuff written in his tiles. I love those kind of bizarre little things.
It's amazing. That documentary is really, really good. If people have not seen it, check it out. Like you said, it's called Resurrect Dead. And the guy who was doing it, he had a hole in the bottom of his car, and he would stop at like a random spot, and he would put these things down with a layer of tar, and then he would put like something over it and then another layer of tar. So eventually, while cars would run it over, the tar would kind of peel up, and eventually these tiles would be visible. And it was all over the place. You're right. It started in Philadelphia, and then there was some in New York, Boston, I think like Buenos Aires, Brazil, yeah, but most of them were in Philadelphia, I believe.
You should try to connect with the filmmaker. I don't know if he's still doing stuff with it, but that could be a really cool episode of Crawl Space. And I don't think many people have done that story as a podcast.
Yeah,
I had some experience with the tiles, because when I watched the movie years ago, I was still playing in a band, and we decided to get some linoleum and make a few of the tiles to see how it worked. And the way we did it was linoleum tiles are linoleum, whatever that material is, it's super strong, but you can get samples. So if you own a building or something and you're going to get tiles, you can write to these companies or go through their website and they'll send you samples of the different colors. So we got a bunch of samples of linoleum, and with a rotary tool, I carved, you know, the different letters and stuff in it, and made my kind of pattern, almost like a stained glass kind of technique where you have the different colors put together. And then what you do is you use the same paper that goes under asphalt shingles on a roof. It's like kind of a tar paper. You put one layer of it, then you put a bunch of crack seal over it, which is like an asphalt crack seal. Then you put the linoleum, another layer of the asphalt crack seal, then another layer of the paper. So in the end, you have this kind of pancake. But what happens when you put it on the road, the sun and the heat coming down, hitting it, will kind of melt it into the concrete, and all the cars driving over it will push it down. And then by the time enough cars drive over it, it wears away the top, reveals your design, and the thing's already embedded in the pavement. And it turns out on the east coast of Canada, the salt we put on our roads and the snow plows that go over it see to it that they only last, you know, one season. But in like San Francisco, some of this guy's tiles, they're there for like 30 years until the roads are redone.
I love how I kind of haphazardly described how this guy would put him down. You're like, no, I've done it. This is exactly how you do it.
Yeah. No, I've made some pretty cool ones too.
I don't doubt that.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is an open discussion.
Speaking of worldwide phenomenon, Jordan Bonaparte, you've been doing some amazing coverage of UFOs, and specifically UFOs in Canada. And I got to give you props for the work you're doing, because it is moving the story forward. And I'm really proud of you for doing that. I think it's pretty amazing.
Well, I think it's kind of a niche thing, because it's like a lot of people cover the UFO phenomenon, but they really focus on the big American stories. Mm-hmm. So by like my show, I just focus on Canadian stuff. I'm really into UFOs. And by focusing on Canadian UFO stories, it kind of sees to it that the stuff I cover generally isn't out there, especially not to the extent of, you know, if I was covering, you know, the Pentagon, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's I'm into it, man. I love that sort of thing.
As you should be, and you've got a knack for it. You've had some great guests lately, and two guests that you had in an episode that kind of blew my mind, I got to be honest. You spoke to Candace and Anagate.
Yeah.
Yes, and they seem like wonderful people, but what they saw, and I guess have continued to see, I would imagine, above their house is so interesting and confusing. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah. So here's the background. Is maybe 2 years ago, I did a series of episodes on my show that I just called UFOs Above Canada. And kind of the idea of that series was like to have just really basic, short episodes that tell one aspect of the UFO phenomenon. So part one was like, what is a UFO? And we just talked to, you know, myself and a guest in general about what it is. Number two, the second episode was like things people have commonly mistake for UFOs. I did an episode about reporting a UFO. And what I did, that episode is one of my favorite episodes of my show, because it was reporting to professional UFO investigators a UFO sighting my then 7-year-old son saw on the way to Dairy Queen. They did an investigation. Turned out he saw a satellite. But anyway, and so when I did this series of episodes, I wanted to encourage people to share their experiences with me, to either include them in an episode or reference it or something. So what I did was I made a Facebook group simply called UFOs Above Canada, and make it kind of a spot online where people can go just to discuss Canadian UFO events and share Canadian based stories, again, to separate it from the predominantly American UFO discourse that happens on the internet. The group, it grew really fast and caught on. It has like 5,000 members, which isn't crazy for a Facebook group, but these are like people who are really active, and there's, you know, constantly posts and discussion. Anyway, so this story with Candace and Anagate really starts in that Facebook group. I noticed someone join named Candace and very quickly made a post that was like a call for help. It was basically, I don't know what's going on. I've never seen anything like this, but every night UFOs or something is appearing over my house in Ontario. She lived in rural Ontario. She included a whole bunch of photos, and I'm talking like 30 or 40 photos of just weird lights in the sky above her house. And her post in the group was basically asking for advice on who to turn to better understand what's happening. I contacted her and told her that I probably couldn't help her figure out what it is, but I could at least help her get her photos off her phone onto Facebook. Because what she was initially sharing was she only knew how to share screenshots. So she'd take a photo, take a screenshot of the photo and put it online, kind of like, you know, like our moms probably would do that sort of thing. So we were talking on Facebook Messenger, and I was walking her through how to get the photos off her phone on the Facebook. And I was like, you know, this is so crazy what's going on. If you want to tell people and connect with people, come on my show and share the story. And she was all for it. So Candace and her partner Anagate, who is a very kind of deep spiritual First Nations man, who the two of them came on and just told the whole story, which in essence is every night the two of them go outside Anagate often will sing traditional music, and they will just sit there with their camera taking pictures of the UFOs that spin above their house. And it's an easy story to roll your eyes at, but some of the photos they shared, I think, are pretty compelling.
And there's no solution to this yet. They've been doing this since, what, December?
Yeah, it started shortly after the pandemic started, and they believe there's some connection. I'm not going to get into all the weird COVID related conspiracy theories, as fun as they are to talk about, but they first saw them shortly after the pandemic began, and it's just been getting more and more frequent. And Candace told me it's at a point now where she can pretty much go outside. If she just stares up at the sky, something will appear above her.
And they take different shapes and things like that?
Yeah, well, here's the issue. And this is an issue that's very common with UFOs and these kind of stories. If you take your cell phone, even if I told you, Tim, go out tonight and take a really good picture of the moon for me, you know, you would think that would be easy. But if you point your camera on your phone, or even a good digital camera, at the dark sky with a white circle moon, when you look at that the photo afterwards, it's a blurry mess. Cameras just aren't good at capturing a point of light amongst a black dark background. It's just, they're not set up for it. So when Candace describes what she sees, she describes seeing multiple lights spinning out of control, joining together, separating, getting larger and bigger, changing colors, shining lights down at her, all this different stuff. But when you look at the photos that she takes, it doesn't necessarily match the way she describes them. But if you listen just to her words, she describes seeing craft organizing in the sky and seeing beings within the crafts. At some points, them coming low enough to the ground that she can make out beings in windows. When you look at her photos, what you see are blurry blobs.
Almost like orbs, right? Like orbs of light. Yeah.
Yeah, you would see, like, people would describe like what's seen in those photos as an orb, but it's like, that's not enough for me to be like, you know, she's crazy. I think, like I said, if I said, whenever people say, you know, these photos of, you know, Candace took or whoever took are bullshit, like, that's, you know, get a good picture of a UFO. My rebuttal to them is often like, go outside tonight and send me a good picture you took of the moon, because it's not going to happen. And the moon is much easier to take a picture of than a much smaller light zipping around up there.
And this took place in Kingston?
Oh, yes, it is Kingston. They're in Kingston, Ontario. Yeah, they're on the outskirts of Kingston, Ontario, is if my memory serves me correctly. But for people who want to see the photos, I've posted a few of them online. But that UFOs Above Canada group, she posts in there so often. There's so many photos. She could, every day, she could put up 30 new photos.
It's right on the water. I'm wondering if it's got something to do with that. Do you think that there's any connection with anything that might be...
Lance, no. It's UFOs.
Well, what I'm
saying...
It's not a
reflection off the lake.
What if... Not a reflection. What if these unidentified flying objects are... in search of a source of fresh water?
Well, there's a common connection between UFO sightings and water. People even use the term USO, like unidentified submerged object. And like where I'm in Nova Scotia, like one of the most famous UFO stories in Canada is the story of a UFO crash in Shag Harbour, Nova Scotia, where a UFO is said to have been, well, was witnessed crashing into the water and spending a bit of time in the water before it ultimately left a few days later. But it's, some people see, I think it was specifically salt water. I don't know why that would be, but I guess salt would be conductive, for like electrically conductive more than clear water. Maybe that has something to do with it.
That's a good point.
But you know, like water here, I don't want to get too weird, but water, we can all agree on is like the source of life on Earth. If there was no planets without water, generally don't have light, life. Earth has life because of water. We're having on our own planet, given how far, you know, we are into the destroying it. Water is becoming a scarce resource. They say future wars are going to be fought over water and not over oil. And, you know, as a Canadian surrounded by fresh water, you know, maybe we need to start worrying about it. But anyway, that all said, if so, let's just say you believe that UFOs are extraterrestrial beings coming to Earth, they very well could be interested in our water more than anything else here, more than slaughtering cows and making designs in our cornfields.
Look, have all the cornfields you want. Leave our water supply alone.
Yeah, seriously.
And Jordan, you're talking to a couple of Americans here. We're coming for your water.
I believe it. Honestly, it'll happen.
We took
eventually.
Your poutine, and now we're going to take your water.
The poutine,
yeah,
you
poutine
can have.
It has made its way into American menus, hasn't it?
I'm sure you don't do it right.
No, they don't do it right. They don't do it right. They don't. They. For whatever reason, they feel like the cheese curds don't have to be the cheese curds that should go in poutine. They'll change it up with something. It's not the cheese curds that should go in. It's bullshit. Bullshit.
Well, I am. Despite being a Canadian, the poutine is more like a French Canadian thing, which I'm not. I'm an Anglophone, but I prefer a poutine with just shredded cheese as opposed to the curds. Like, I think a purist would only want the curds. You guys, next time you come, if you ever come to Nova Scotia, I'll make you like a Bonaparte style poutine, and I think it's above the typical Canadian poutine.
Right. I'm there. Yeah. We're there tomorrow.
It'll be my yearly intake of poutine.
New England is known for its charming towns, comforting foods, and of course its historical contributions, but the Down East region can have a dark side. I'm investigative journalist Kylie Lowe, and on my weekly podcast, Dark Down East, I dig into both decades-old and modern-day cases from my home state of Maine and the greater New England area. In each episode of Dark Down East, I seek insight from law enforcement officials, family members, and other loved ones, who are both deeply familiar with the cases and the individuals at the heart of them. Join me as I unveil intricacies of these stories that are often overlooked, honor the grit of those searching for justice, and shine a light on cases that you aren't hearing on other podcasts. Listen to Dark Down East now, wherever you're listening.
Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
With UFOs, like, There's so many different theories as to what they are. I often will go, like, in discussing them, I often jump to the what people would call the extraterrestrial hypothesis, being the meaning behind the lights in the sky or some kind of other beings coming here. But a lot of people look instead at things like some kind of scientific phenomenon that we just, or some kind of natural phenomenon that science can't explain. That's one explanation. It could be some weird spy kind of stuff. Like, now drones are so much more advanced than, you know, than we would ever know. So the idea, like, when the government is getting involved nowadays, or even historically, when the government's involved in investigating UFOs, it's not because they want to figure out, like, you know, who's, what aliens are flying this stuff, and we need to make some kind of agreement with these aliens. What they're thinking is, like, is this the Russians sending weird, you know, aircraft over here to take pictures of us? And nowadays, is it, it's the same kind of thing, except with drones. There are drones that are, use your imagination, what foreign government may want to do with our, with having objects in our airspace. So I think it's a fascinating topic, not just because of the possibilities of what's up there, but I think it's one of those things you'll be able to relate with to this through the Maura Murray case. You take any fantastic story, that fantastic in that it has a lot of different elements and it spreads in all these interesting directions. You take any story like that, be it the Maura Murray case, UFOs, the treasure buried under Oak Island. The story themselves is fascinating, but equally fascinating, if not maybe even more, is all the fascinating people that get drawn to it and form that story and add to it or provide the color for the story. So talking Maura Murray, you got like James Renner and John Smith and all this drama that exists because of that. It only adds to the story. With UFOs, it's the same kind of thing. People like Candace and Anagate, there are people that are like the one in a million people that you have the chance to connect with and talk to. And they're so fascinating. And then you have all these investigators and these shadowy people that claim to work for the government and work on these, you know, secret projects. That's the stuff I like as much as the phenomenon itself, the people that find their way mixed up in it.
Man, have you seen the documentary? I think we've talked about it. The man who sees UFOs, or the curse of the man who sees UFOs.
Yeah.
Have we talked about this?
Yeah. You know what? When I talked to Candace and Anagate, I thought about that a bit. That documentary was good because it tells the story of one of these interesting folks.
We're so close to having this guy on the show. This guy, Christo Rapolo, communicated with him. We've communicated with him and had a phone conversation. And he's the only guest where I said, I don't know, he might be too much for us. Not in a bad way.
Yeah.
But he might be, like, just in a 5-minute phone call, it was like a download of what was happening in his life for the past year. Mm-hmm. And it was all, you know, who's watching him, who's out to get him, you know, what's been hacked. But he's a really sweet guy. He's a really nice guy. And it was like, okay, maybe we should rethink this. So some time went by. We reached out to him again. And he was like, sure, let me know when you want me on the show. And then I think I sent an email asking him for some dates that would work. And he just sent an email back that was blank. So I was like, okay, maybe we should put this guy on the
sign.
Back burner again.
That's a sign. Yeah, no, I've been there before. There's some people that are so intense and passionate that it just doesn't work for audio. You ask a question and then it's just, you might as well just leave the room because they got so much going on. I've had a few like that. I could see him, like, just from watching that documentary, I could imagine how that interview would go.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously the term UFO, it just unidentified is it's, that's all it stands for.
Yeah.
We're not saying extraterrestrial. You know, I think people get into trouble when they throw out their specific theories because it's really easy to prove any specific theory wrong.
Yeah, well, and even now, a lot of people get out of using UFO. It's a bit of a, like, kind of a taboo to even use it because of the baggage that goes with the word. People will often use UAP for unidentified aerial phenomenon. And it's something like, this is something the government is involved in, both in Canada and the United States, and they will favor UAP because it's more all-encompassing, and it loses the baggage of sci-fi, UFO. Because again, like many of the theories of what it is people are seeing and reporting in the skies aren't necessarily flying objects, but could be more accurately described as some sort of aerial phenomena. So UAP, unexplained or unidentified aerial phenomenon, is it's what I don't know. It makes more sense, but I do like UFO, although that generally is interpreted to be aliens flying a spaceship unsuccessfully. Yeah.
In your work with the Canadian sightings, have you noticed a particular location that has more sightings than others?
It's interesting because there's this a guy who's he's now a friend of mine. I met him through the show, but he's become a good friend. His name's Chris Rutkowski. He has been doing this thing since, I think, early 80s that he calls the Canadian UFO Survey. And what he does is every year he solicits data on UFO sighting reports from different groups. So he goes to government sources, like aviation, whatever, like where people would report weird objects. He also goes to the different UFO investigation groups like MUFON and whatnot. And he collects all the UFO sightings data each year. He puts it all together and he breaks the data down in a variety of different ways and publishes a report. And the report will show things like, you know, how many sightings were there this year? On it, like what colors were reported? What was the duration of the sightings? How many people saw them? What month, what time of day? Where were they? What province? You know, what month did it happen? And in the end, he gets, like, if you had got his first report the first year he did it, it would have been really cool. She would have been like, oh, wow, you know, 7% of UFOs are red, that sort of thing. But now that he's been doing it for 30-something years, you get the year's report, but it's put in the context of what's average and what trends he's seeing. So it's really cool. So each year when he publishes it, he'll come on my show and we break down the data. I can't think of the number off the top of my head, but 2020 was one of Canada's largest, one of Canada's highest number of UFO sightings or report years. If you look at where the sightings are happening, it's very connected to population. Majority of sightings come from the places where the majority of people live. Toronto, you know, Quebec, the big cities, Vancouver. These are the big cities where there's a ton of people. That's where the majority of UFO reports are. I've always asked them if there's any way they can account for population so you can get an idea of, like, on average, are more people in Toronto reporting UFOs, or are there just more UFO reports because there's, you know, millions of people there? But anyway, if you look at the data in Canada, if you wanted to see a UFO, if you were in Toronto at night in the summer, that is where it's most typical. But that said, you also have to think logically. There's more people in Toronto. You can see lights in the sky better at night. And there's more people out at night in the summer.
There was even like a time. It was even like 10 or 10:30 or 11 o'clock was the most likely time to see these UAP.
Yeah, because it's like the way they have it set up now, if you're reporting a UFO sighting, there's so many places online where you can fill in a form to report the data that they can really, like, so many of the reports take the same shape as far as the data is concerned that it's really easy to compile them and compare them. But it's fascinating. If anyone's interested, if they Google Canadian UFO survey, they'll find his reports, and he has it. It's not boring. There's a lot of graphs, but he has it written in an interesting narrative way so you can flip through it and really see the data. There's someone doing something similar in the United States, but I don't think they've been at it as long, so they don't have as much historical data. But Chris Rutkowski had told me that the American data for 2020 was very similar to the Canadian data as far as trends and numbers of sightings. But it's a very common experience to see one. What a lot of people say, and this has been put to the public in a variety of different ways by a variety of people, but most notably by Stanton Friedman, who's a Canadian UFO researcher who passed away last year or maybe in 2019. But what he says is if he traveled the world doing presentations on UFOs, but he would often ask people like, who in this room has seen a UFO? And he said, if he asks that question, no matter what the room is, 10% of the people in the room will raise their hand. And then if he follows that question up with, of all of you who saw a UFO, how many of you reported the UFO? And 10% of that will raise their hand. So if there's 100 people in a room, 10 of them may have seen one, but only one of the 100 have actually reported it. So if you extrapolate that idea, if let's say if we have 1,400 UFO sightings in Canada last year, those are just the people that reported it, but you could very easily put two zeros on the end of that and probably get closer to what was actually, you know, seen in the sky. So it's a very common experience to see one. What it is and if it's something the government should be concerned with or people should be worried about, that's a whole other question. I did a series of episodes called the Bell Island Boom about an aerial explosion in Newfoundland that both Canadian and American government investigated after the event happened. And a lot of witnesses, it's kind of gets tied up with UFO stories, because what happened was this small island in Newfoundland, there was a massive explosion in the sky that nobody saw coming. This happened in the early 70s. And what it ended up doing was it put a bunch of craters in people's lawns, blew up a couple small buildings like sheds, but it also fried the power lines and the electrical systems in kind of in a series of homes that in like the area that people would have called ground zero, right where it immediately hit. It killed a bunch of chickens, blew up a couple TVs, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, a lot of it gets lumped into the UFO phenomenon because a lot of people saw immediately before the boom or the blast or whatever you want to call it, a light coming down from the sky, from the clouds to Bell Island, like a beam of light. And some of the witnesses who were on the island at the time recalled seeing just balls of like electricity and balls of light just hovering above houses and above them and whatever. And it just sounds like the stuff of science fiction, but Canadian and American defense were there investigating, interviewing people, taking samples. And it turns out, at least what their explanation has been, is that they were investigating a very rare but super powerful form of lightning that's called ball lightning, which is a type of lightning that rather than being a bolt, like you would typically see, or just a blast among the clouds, it kind of forms like a ball in a specific area. And I guess the amount of electricity and power that comes from these balls of lightning was so intense that American military, like satellites and stuff that look for, I don't know what they're looking for, but they picked up all this anomalous activity on Bell Island. There was like, it was all over the world, like satellites that search for anomalous stuff was picking this up. But anyway, that's just a story that would be descriptive of like UAP would encompass that, but you wouldn't, like, it's not really UFO. But anyway,
right?
I don't buy that ball lightning. No,
you think it's a cover up? Well, some people with
it's
the Bell
totally
Island
a cover up.
With the Bell Island boom, some people think it was a test of weapon that they were designing, that they were experimenting with at the time at the end of the Cold War, that used radio waves in some way to damage stuff. Some people believe it was a test of this kind of subsonic laser beam sort of thing, but
sure. So sonic warfare. That's,
yeah,
a thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was actually a documentary about the Bell Island boom that CBC did shortly after it happened in the 70s. And it's really interesting because it's like at the end of the Cold War, the world was just a weird place. We got another caller. Hey, caller, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
This is Chloe Cantor calling from undisclosed hospital.
Oh my goodness, Chloe. I was before we went on air, I asked Tim and Lance about you. I don't know if you'll be able to hear them all right, but do you want to talk about what's going on?
Oh, sure. I am currently, well, it's been since the end of March. I have been diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome. So my immune system attacked my nerves. Huh. So I don't have, like, myelin sheath around them anymore. So now, like, my body has no cell service. So, like, the messages from my brain aren't going to other parts of my body, like the White Mountains of New Hampshire. However, they did some crazy treatments on me, and I seem to be getting better, and I should make a full recovery.
Oh, well, that's fantastic news. So you sound positive.
I am. Yeah, it's been like an insane journey, and I'm sure I'll be much happier when it's all over. But okay. I just feel lucky that my prognosis is good and I should be able to get all better.
And was this like, is this something that was like, did you see this coming, or was it like just all of a sudden this happened?
It was very all of a sudden, and that's very characteristic. It's not something with like a slow onset. It's like one day you notice, and this was my case, you notice that your toes are numb and you're like, why has my foot fallen asleep for 24 hours? And then it persists, and 5 days later, I couldn't walk.
Wow. You're getting lots of messages of support in the chat, including from Miss Gags saying hey to you. Wow. Well, that's shocking, but I'm glad to hear that the prognosis is good. That's very scary. I saw posts about it, and I even asked Tim and Lance before we started, like, what's going on with Chloe? But yeah, scary.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, this conversation, I didn't mean to talk about myself so much, but hopefully we've raised maybe a little awareness, because it's so rare. It's like one or two in, I think, 50,000 or something like that. I don't know the exact statistic, but it's very uncommon. But it's nice that I can still participate in podcasts from here. Thanks for taking my call.
Are you coming back? I know you put your podcast on hold as you were dealing with this and everything else in life. Are you coming back soon?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. We're not done.
Amazing that Chloe's doing better and she's receiving this treatment that is, I guess, revolutionary. She is honestly one of the strongest individuals I've ever met. Only saying that because we managed to get her car stuck in the middle of nowhere in Vermont, and she was the one that kept us together. Like, she was the one that was the voice of reason and kept her head about herself. And it's great to know that someone like that is fighting her way through this, and she will come out of this stronger than she did going into it.